The following podcast is presented by Wellspring of Life Church, a community of faith, hope, and purpose.
Tonight we are going to be in Hosea. It's one of those small books in the Old Testament, one of the considered minor prophets. So if you guys can just start finding your way there to Hosea chapter 2, we'll get there in just a minute. But one thing I was kind of thinking of tonight in preparation, and actually I've been in preparation for tonight for quite some time. You know, Shorty at the beginning of church was asking about, you know, have you had some rough things happen today and this week and this month? And man, if she would have kept going, my hand just would have stayed up. And I'm sure some of your guys' would have too. So it has been a message in preparation, not necessarily like, oh man, I'm going through this. If I get a chance to talk at church, I'm going to talk about this. It wasn't that, but it's one of those lifetime scenarios that gets you ready to stand up in front of people and just talk about how amazing the Lord is and how difficult life can be and how that doesn't change anything and how good and amazing our God is. When I say the word wilderness, what do you guys think of? Colorado? Okay. What else do you guys think of when I say wilderness? You have to shout it out. Nacho! What else? Mountains? Okay. Here in Colorado, we leave out the T. We just say mountains. Desert? Okay. Anything else? Middle of nowhere, Alaska. Okay. All right, so wilderness by definition is some place that is uncultivated or uninhabited. And that can describe a lot of different places. It's somewhere that's absent of human flourishing or human existence, really, for the most part. With some exceptions, of course. It can be like the places you name, deserts, prairies, mountains, whatever. When I think of wilderness, I usually think of just really beautiful places that I could get away from things. And of course, that's not always the case. Sometimes can be stuck in the wilderness, and that's not necessarily a good thing. But usually when you hear the word wilderness, it's kind of the idea is a place where there's a lot of potential danger. And if you've ever been in the wilderness for an extended period of time, if you're not prepared to be there, there's a lot of things, whether it's the elements, wildlife, whatever, that could kill you. And you have to have some experience to make it through the wilderness if you're going to stay there for a long period of time. I'm not talking about going out camping in this big fifth wheel camper. No offense, Larry, I know you just got one. But you know how to rough it in the wilderness. I know that. So I'm not talking about that kind of camping. I'm talking about you rely on survival techniques. You're spending extended amount of time there. And if you don't know what you're doing, you might not make it back. And a lot of times, the wilderness is a struggle. To be in a wilderness, you're going to be there absent of a lot of the amenities that makes life comfortable. Being a history teacher, I think a lot of, you know, the pioneers heading out west and some things that they had to experience in getting from, like, embarking out of St. Louis and heading out into this wilderness, this frontier, that they really didn't know exactly what they were going to come across, and the things that they had to put in their wagons. They would sell everything. They'd put in this one survival kit in this huge wagon, this covered wagon, get a couple oxen, and they would head out west, and a third of the people that went west didn't make it. A third of the people that went west died for a variety of reasons. Native Americans, cholera, dysentery, you name it, elements, snake bites, whatever, they just didn't make it. The mountain men were kind of the exception of the pioneers, and the mountain men usually would stay up west. They would keep along rivers. They would trap going upstream, in the spring and in the summertime, midsummer, they would start collecting all their traps, coming back downriver so that they could move quicker, setting up trading posts. They learned how to live off the land. And they were rough people. I remember this story of Jedediah Smith, and he got attacked by a bear. And the bear, good thing, I'm making sure no kids are in here. The bear just like took his scalp and ripped it off. And one of his buddies had to have a makeshift sewing kit, stitch his scalp back onto his head. But you guys did not expect to hear that coming to church tonight. And then he just kept going. You know, they would have to eat 5,000 calories a day or they would die. Their bodies would work so hard surviving in the wilderness that if they didn't eat that much and find that much, kill that much, they would die. Danny and I watched a movie not too long ago called The Mountain Between Us. And if you guys haven't seen that movie, I highly recommend it. It's got Idris Elba in it, and we love Idris Elba. Just listen to him talk, you know, and just be enthralled. Even on Finding Dory, and he's one of the seals, it's like that seal is awesome. Anyways, I'm getting distracted. So in that movie, him and Kate Winslet, their plane goes down. And he's a doctor, so he's been preparing his life to take care of people, but, you know, he wasn't preparing for his plane to crash on top of a snow-capped mountain, having to find his way out. The pilot had had a stroke while flying, and that's why the plane crashed. And I'm not going to spoil it for you, but in that movie, they go through some pretty rough experiences. If you want to get a good picture of wilderness, watch that movie. When I was younger, my dad put together a survival kit for me and my brother. My wife gives me such a hard time about this, but it's got like a lot of essential things that could save our lives. And rarely do we ever go places where that survival kit would be needed. But when I go hunting, I take it with me. But it's really cool. I like to be prepared. I like the feeling of that security when I go to places. And it could come in handy. It might not ever be needed, but at the same time, what if it was? And then, like, you know, shows like Survivor Man. I don't even know if that's still on TV. Survivor Man made Bear Grylls. I love Bear Grylls, but Survivor Man made Bear Grylls look like an amateur. I can't even remember the guy's name that's in Survivor Man. Anybody know it? That sounds right. But he went out, he would go out by himself, and he would take his own video camera. Bear Grylls goes out with like a huge camera crew full of snacks and everything that they need to eat. He's never in any risk of actually dying. This guy that did Survival Man, he actually was. And he would like hike a mile, set up a camera, hike a mile back, and then film himself doing something. So he did everything twice. And then the plane, like a plane would drop him off in the middle of nowhere. And then he would show how to survive. And then a plane would come pick him up and hope that he was, you know, still there. And of course, I'm sure he still had some ways to communicate with people. But again, I'm just kind of attracted to these ideas. And I think a lot of guys are. I don't know if women necessarily feel that hunger to watch somebody strive and struggle to make it through the wild or want to go out and rough it and test yourself and see, you know, if you could actually stay alive or not. But there are guys out there that feel that way. And all of this thinking about wilderness is not exactly what the Bible talks about with wilderness. When I say wilderness in the Bible, your mind might gravitate towards a few examples. One would be like in the Exodus. Early in the Exodus story, it says that God brought the people of Israel out of Egypt into the wilderness. And there in the wilderness is where they camped before Mount Sinai. Later on, there was another wilderness in that same story. And that was the wilderness of disbelief where they ended up spending about 40 years there until one generation had died off. And then the new generation would be able to push into the promised land. In 1 Samuel, David, after he had already been anointed king by Samuel, the prophet, was being hunted by Saul, the king of the time. Even though David had been anointed king, he had not been enthroned yet. So he is wandering through the wilderness, fleeing for his life from the king of Israel. And then in the Gospels, in the New Testament, and this guy came up tonight, John the Baptist, he went out to the wilderness to preach. And Jesus, right after he was baptized, went out to the wilderness as well and fasted. The word for wilderness in the Old Testament is the word midbar. And I can't roll my R's really well, otherwise that would have sounded way cooler. Don't make fun of me. But midbar means that it's also like an area that's uninhabited, but it also has this implication of pasture land, a place of grazing, a place of preparation. When you go back through these examples that I've just given and see this kind of come to light, like you think about Israel coming out of Egypt, they went into a wilderness before Mount Sinai, before God, who was hovering over the mountain in a cloud. And Moses would go up and meet with him. They got the Ten Commandments there. There, God was preparing Israel to be his covenant people and a light to the world. Fast forward to the wilderness of disbelief. That wilderness was not about the people who didn't believe. That wilderness was more about the generation that was going to inherit the promised land. That wilderness was a preparation for their hearts to be able to trust in their Lord, to carry them into a promised land, defeat the enemy that made them look like little grasshoppers. Again, that's a preparation. The wilderness that David fled into, that prepared him to be a king. He got anointed, but then he had to be prepared. And in all of those phases, if you guys remember the story about King David, he messed up a lot during that wilderness experience, but he learned and he grew. And God showed him grace, and grace through unexpected people. And he rallied together a lot of outcasts. That's what his army was made up of, is he gathered people that were shunned by the rest of society. That's who flocked to him. So God was preparing him in that wilderness to be a king. In the Gospels, John the Baptist went in the wilderness to prepare the way for Jesus. And he was preaching repentance, and he was baptizing people out of the wilderness. And then Jesus, when he went out, he was getting prepared for his ministry. He had not done what we read about in the Gospels until after that wilderness experience. And that was a preparation in itself. Charles Swindoll said that when you accept the fact that sometimes seasons are dry and times are hard, and that God is in control of both, you'll discover a sense of divine refuge, because the hope then is in God and not in yourself. And when you look at all those examples I gave at the beginning, people prepare themselves to go into the wilderness. I don't know anybody that's like, all right, I'm just going to go get dropped off into the wilderness like this, and we'll see what happens. There's always a preparation phase before the wilderness. God uses wilderness for preparation for life. It's a big difference. And now we can prepare ourselves for the wilderness. But as you guys probably know who have been there, there's nothing that prepares you for life and faith and love and grace quite like a wilderness does. That's where we find the most growth in our heart and in our spiritual walk. It's not in the easy times. It's when we're down in the valleys. And that's what brings me to the verse that I'm going to read here. I was up on a ladder a while ago cleaning some windows, and I was just listening to the Bible, and it was in Hosea. And, you know, life has been difficult. Some of you know what some of those struggles have been for me and for Danny, and Danny alluded to some of it earlier on too, and that's just one part of a series of struggles for about, I don't know, about 5 years now, almost 5 years. Life has presented a lot of obstacles. And of course, my wilderness experience isn't the same as yours, and I think some of you probably look at my wilderness experience and be like, it's cakewalk. And somebody would look at your wilderness experience and say, that's cakewalk. So we're not here to judge each other's wilderness experience. We're here to just realize that God wants to meet us in those experiences. And this verse almost, these two verses almost just knocked me off my ladder. It just like, it felt like the Lord was just coming to meet me right where I was at and speak these words directly to my heart. And it's in verses 14 and 15. It says, therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her. And there I will give her her vineyards and make the valley of Achor a door of hope. And there she shall answer as in the days of her youth, as in the time when she came out of the land of Egypt. Hosea here is reminiscing back to the Exodus story and talking about Israel. And if you want to go back and read chapters 1 and the first part of chapter 2 to set the context, you certainly can. But just to give you an idea here, Hosea has really kind of been coming down on Israel through his prophecy. God's using Hosea as an example, an illustration, a lifelike illustration of Israel's faithlessness. But at the same time, there's this insert in all of this, followed up by chapter 3 in Hosea when he goes and redeems his wife, his prostitute wife, takes her right off the trade block, walks right down to the street, and she's ready to just give herself away to another person, and he comes down and shows her love and grace and tenderness and says, come home with me. The Valley of Achor, in this, Achor means trouble. So here, another way of reading it is, there I will give her her vineyards, which is an illustration of fruit and plenty and provision. I will give them that provision in the valley of their trouble. They will get a door of hope. So right before this, God is like, a lot of bad things are about ready to happen to Israel. But even in that, I'm going to present them with this door that they can walk through, this door of hope, bright, shining door of hope, and I'm going to speak tenderly to them, even though they have been giving themselves away to others. You know, there's no debating that when Israel was in Egypt, that was a valley. That was a big valley. None of us here that I know of have been in slavery before, so it's hard for us to really empathize with that. But we have had our struggles. And, you know, everyone's life is full of valleys and mountaintops. The longer you live, the more valleys and mountaintops you experience. Some people's lives might be more like rolling hills. They've had it pretty smooth for the most part. Some people's lives might feel like lowlands and like plateaus. And sorry for all the geography here, but it's like, we all have different experiences, but we hit low points and we have high points in our lives. We've all experienced moments of deep hurt. And sometimes that hurt has been caused by ourselves. And sometimes that hurt has been dealt to us by the hands of other people. Most of us, not all of us, have experienced loss. Loss that when you experience it, it's like a horrible dream that you don't know if you're going to wake up from it, and you're in disbelief and shock the whole time. Hurt and loss that just cuts you really deep that you don't shake for a very long time. We've all experienced uncertainty. We've all experienced illness in some way, some illnesses worse than others, some diagnoses worse than others. We've all experienced sin and the casualties that sin brings with it. We have all descended into the valley of trouble at some point. And when I was up on that ladder, it felt like God was just saying, you're in a wilderness, but here I am to speak tenderly to you. Here I am to present you with that door of hope. And we see that illustrated a lot. It wasn't just words that God spoke. Jesus lived it. And you think about the people that Jesus encountered who were in the valleys and how tenderly he dealt with them. Some people that come to mind, the woman at the well. She lived a pretty rough life, going from man to man. And Jesus just spoke out of love to her. He was so tender in how he cared for her heart. When she had to go to the well in the middle of the day when it was hot because nobody wanted to be around her. The woman caught in adultery. You guys remember that story? And she is before the feet of Jesus, and everyone wants to kill her with stones. And Jesus was so tender to her. Or the blind beggar, or the doubters that he talked to on the road to Emmaus. They're like, oh, I guess it was all a crock. And here he is, just loving them all the way, and then he reveals himself to them. Zacchaeus, the tax collector that everybody hated because he was a tax collector, and Jesus went to his house, wanted to go be with him. Or the woman who bled for 12 years and just wanted to touch the hem of his robe. Or the cripple that was crippled for 38 years and was laying beside the pool of Bethesda, and how he reached out to him. Or all the lepers that he healed when everybody wanted to stay away. His hand was always extended to the people who were hurting and who were in the valley, who were in despair. In Luke chapter 1, Zechariah, John the Baptist's father, is prophesying about the role that John the Baptist is going to be playing. And it's a really awesome prayer and prophecy and song. Worship time follows up Mary's time of worship as well. But in there, you know, he's talking about how John the Baptist is going to point to Jesus. And then this is how, who hadn't even been born yet, mind you. But this is what he says about Jesus and the coming king. He says, because of the tender mercy of our God, whereby the sunrise shall visit us from on high to give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the way of peace. And I love the image of Jesus as a sunrise. And for us today, a sunrise is something that some of us who, you know, if we get up early enough, I know that there's some people in here that miss the sunrise pretty regularly because they like to sleep in, and that's fine. But there's something about a sunrise. I've been driving to school, and I pull into the parking lot, and I seriously am just awestruck by the beauty. And I think probably some of the kids in the school bus might have thought I was like Rain Man out there just staring at the sunset, standing in the middle of the parking lot. But it just overwhelms me about how beautiful it is. And to get to start the day that way, it's incredible. It is absolutely incredible. And I don't know about you guys, but my job as a school teacher, in the wintertime, I go to school before the sun comes up. And then sometimes if I have a really late day, I might come home after the sun has already gone down. I might be at work in darkness all day long. And that's hard. It's hard when the days are so short and there's so much darkness out there. And then when spring hits and things are coming to life and the days are getting longer, There's just something about that, that you feel life being reinvigorated in yourself and in the world and the beauty that comes from it. But when we think about the sunrise in the ancient world thousands of years ago, it would have had a whole different meaning, because a lot of people slept outside, especially think about shepherds, migrant people that are going to be outside. You might not make it through the night. You're in the wild. You are in a place where you could get eaten pretty easily. So when that sun comes up, that's a beautiful sign, because a lot of things that are really dangerous to you in the wilderness do their hunting at night because they can see way better than we can. The other thing that a sunrise would have been, other than safety, is it would have brought light, obviously, warmth, because the nights, even in deserts, get really cold. So as that sun starts to come up, and you feel that warmth. I don't know how many of you guys have experienced that, where you've been out, like times I've been out hunting, and the nights get pretty cold, even with two pairs of socks on. You feel like if you accidentally stumbled over a rock, your toes might break off because they're so frozen solid. And then that sun, you see it start to peak up. And then you just feel the warmth on your face and your body. Oh, it's so incredible. And it's beautiful. A sunrise is absolutely beautiful. It's warmth, it's beauty, it's safety, it's light. And to think of Jesus in that way, in your darkness, if you are in a place of darkness, if you are in a wilderness where you sometimes feel like you're not going to make it out of the wilderness alive, look to the sunrise. Let it fill you with warmth. Let it fill you with safety. Let it fill you with beauty. And in that verse, it says that this sunrise, that Jesus, that is coming from heaven, to all of us who sit in darkness, and yes, that's a spiritual darkness, but also in the shadow of death, it's to guide our feet in the way of peace. And that word peace is eirene in Greek, and it means a state of tranquility, absolute tranquility. And Jesus is saying that I am here in your times of trouble, in your wilderness experience, so that you can still feel at peace through all of that, through the uncertainty, through the pain. You can still be at peace. Later on in Luke, Jesus states his mission, and this is in Luke chapter 4. I'm going to read several of verses 16 through 21 to you. It says, and he came to Nazareth, as Jesus is talking about, where he had been brought up. And as was the custom, he went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day, and he stood up to read. And the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was given to him. And he unrolled the scroll and found the place where it was written, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovering sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the valley of the Lord's favor. And he rolled up the scroll and he gave it to the attendant and sat down. And the eyes of all who were in the synagogue were fixed on him. And he began to say to them, today the scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing. And it's almost like he is saying, for those of you in the wilderness right now, today, as you just heard those words, Jesus is fulfilling that in your life. If you feel like you're in prison to some kind of sin, or if you are just going through hurt, or if you have hit financial difficulties, or whatever the case may be, it applies to everything. Jesus is there to fulfill, to be the sunrise in your darkness. He is there to be the door of hope that Hosea chapter 2 talks about, to look at the sunrise, to look at the hope, to look at the door, not the valley that you're in, but to look at him. You know, even when that pain seems inescapable, he's there to give you peace, to give you freedom. He is our freedom. He's our sight. He's our riches. And there's no single need that any of us in here have that he can't meet. Last night, Danny and I watched the movie Paul. How many of you guys have seen the movie Paul, Apostle of Christ? It just came out not too long ago. Okay, all of you guys need to see it. It's incredible. I'm going to just spoiler alert, give you a few of them in here. You guys all know Paul if you've read the Bible, so there's not much to spoil anyways. But in that movie, Danny put it best at the end of it. We always, end of a movie, we always ask each other, well, what do you think? And I was like, man, that movie was incredible. And then Danny said, it was very sobering. And it was. It was extremely sobering to watch that movie because in that movie, you get a visual of things that we might read about but we don't always picture in our mind. It takes place during the reign of Nero. And I'm just going to tell you, if you have a queasy stomach, don't watch it, because the opening scene is Jim Caviezel, played Jesus in The Passion of the Christ, if you don't know who he is. He plays Luke in this movie, and he's walking down this road in Rome, and this Rome is lit up, but it's lit up with the bodies of Christians who have been burnt at the stake. As far as the eye could see, bodies on fire, some of which were screaming in torment. And that was the life of a Christian for about 250 years in Rome. Yeah, under Nero, it was really bad, and then it would kind of go away a little bit under some, and it became more localized terror tactics against Christians. And then there were a handful of other Roman emperors that would just make life absolutely miserable, and they would take Christians and round them up and throw them into what was called the circus. And the circus was basically people's entertainment. We think of the circus today, it's all these wild animals doing cute tricks, a bear juggling or whatever. Back then, it was wild animals ripping Christians to shreds. Little kids, all the way to adults, men, women, children, it didn't matter. And the sobering part of it is this was the life of the Christian for about as long as the United States has been in existence. And it made my valley seem pretty minuscule. The pain I felt is very real. But then here I am this morning, sitting in my middle-class house in suburban United States, drinking a cup of coffee with my children, and don't have to worry at all about them being tossed into a cage with a lion to shred them to bits. In one scene in the movie, this woman just comes in and falls on her feet, on her knees, and she's hysterical, and there's blood all over her, and they're asking, "Where are you hurt? Where are you hurt?" And she says, "Not my blood. It's the blood of my child who has just been torn from my arms and slaughtered in front of me." And that happened for about 250 years in Rome, and it's happening in parts of the world today. There are people experiencing deep, deep valleys, deeper than probably any of us in this room have experienced. Not to take away from your valley, because it is real. But the thing that I like, and the reason why I'm bringing this up, is the one thing that kept them together was each other. The movie did a great job of portraying Paul's frailty and humanity, and Luke's, and Priscilla, and Aquila, and the other followers of Christ, and how shaken they would get in the midst of all this, just like every single one of us would. But what kept them together was continually pointing each other to Christ. Because at that point in the story, none of them had walked with Christ. This is at the point where all the generation who had seen Jesus face to face were gone, with the exception of Paul. So this is the time of testing for the church. Are they going to believe in who Jesus is? Are they going to believe that he is the resurrection and the life? Are they going to believe that he is the door of hope through all of this? Or are they not? And it's the same for us 2,000 years later. None of us have walked with Jesus hand in hand in the flesh. None of us have seen his face. We've experienced him. We've felt his comfort. We've felt his presence like it was very real and like he might as well have been flesh. And most of the time when we feel that is when we're in the valley. Because he steps right down into the valley, no matter how deep it is. He steps right into it with us.
Thank you for listening to this message by Wellspring of Life Church in Western Colorado. If you'd like to learn more about our community, please visit wellspringoflifechurch.com.